Welcome to No Alter Egos, the place for conversation without the mask. I'm your host, Trill Kennedy. Just want to welcome everybody back. And as a reminder, first and foremost, thank you to everyone who is either listening to this live or watching the rebroadcast on YouTube. It's for all of you guys tuning in. You know, that's why this show gets made. And so first and foremost, thank you guys. If you are watching on the YouTube channel and you like what you're hearing throughout this show, please like and subscribe. It really helps not only with the algorithm, but to spread the word, share on your social media channels. And to everyone that's listening in live, this is an incredible opportunity at the same time to have a place where you can find it on demand and interact with the show in a bit of a different way. So I just want to thank everyone that's tuned in right now, whether you're listening in live or you're catching the YouTube rebroadcast. We have a super special episode coming up today, though. It's the 1 year anniversary of the show. It's, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy to think that literally 1 year ago, the show started. We are on episode 52, 52 weeks in any calendar year. And it has been an incredible ride. It's been really crazy to see the transformation from the very beginning of the show to even now. You know, and I'm still, I will admit that I am still really working to find a content structure that is fully refined. But that's the beautiful part about this, is that you guys are on this journey as well. So you're seeing every iteration and possibility in the show as I iterate and iterate and iterate to really find that full-on identity. But you guys have been resonating with the content that's been created so far, and that makes me really happy to hear, because I do work really hard to make sure that I bring an excellent production to you guys on a week-to-week basis. So to everyone that does listen in, to everyone that sends a message on social media, likes and comments, anything like that, thank you guys seriously from the bottom of my heart. And for everyone generally that listens in, but especially so, if you found a way to connect with the show already, we're still growing on our Instagram page. It's at No Alter Egos, as well as our YouTube channel, the No Alter Egos podcast. And we are also available on demand on the Umoja Radio app. So if you want to go and listen to it again and you don't want to watch on YouTube, or you just want to listen to the podcast, it's also available on Umoja Radio. But we have a really cool episode coming up this week, man. I'm going to be talking through our top five stories of the past year, as well as some honorable mentions. We're going to be talking about that crazy, reckless statement that Joe Biden made, especially in regards to Vladimir Putin and him not being able to stay in power. We're going to get into all that as well. Our Tech Talk Minute, as well as what I'm reading lately, is also going to be coming up. And this week's episode, I'm going to talk to you guys about a main subject that I really think you'll enjoy. And it's about this great game that we're all involved in, this game of life in this economic system that we call capitalism, what it has done to the human mind and to society, how we can improve it going forward, or do we need to find a replacement? There are all these ways that you can look at it, but I wanted to talk about that great game called capitalism that we all are living in, and if it's really the most efficient economic model for society, and if not, how can we improve upon it? What changes need to be made? Do we need to do away with it and come up with a new system altogether? All that and more is going to be coming up on the show. So buckle up, get ready, and stay tuned. Of course, before we kick things off, though, I just want to give a shout out to the show sponsor, and that is Born Saint Clothing, Apparel, and Merchandise. The world makes us sinners, but we are born saints. For more information, you can find Born Saint on Instagram at brn.saint. That's their Instagram handle. Or you can also find them at www.trillkennedy, that's trillkennedy.com/shop on your mobile or desktop browser. So before we get the show started today, there is something that happened this past week that I wanted to speak about today, but I also wanted to give it some time to breathe just because of the relative newness and freshness of it all. I'm sure that by this point, a lot of you have already seen that awful, awful video of that young kid from Missouri, Tyre Sampson, falling from the free fall ride at Icon Park in Orlando, Florida. And I just wanted to take a second to say rest in peace to him. My condolences, my heartfelt condolences go out to his family. And this is one of those crazy things about living in the age of the internet. Can you imagine that your last moments on earth is just shared around the world? I did not share the video. I saw a few people that had, and curiosity got the best of me. I will say that if you're squeamish, don't watch it. But I did want to take a second before we jump into the main show to just acknowledge that this horrible tragedy had happened and is still extraordinarily soon in its wake and aftermath for me to really dive into it too much, other than to say this is obviously, it's always upsetting to see someone lose their life, but to see someone so young lose their life and in what seems to be a possibly preventable manner when you look at what he was complaining about, and there's even a still, like a still of one of the videos where before the ride took off, it's almost apparent to the naked eye that the harness wasn't down all the way. But as I said, there's so many more details that need to come out about this that I didn't want to rush to judgment with it, but I did want to take some time to just send my condolences out to his family and say that he was an NFL prospect and he deserved a chance to try and live that dream, but he's no longer here with us. And maybe this will bring some much needed change, some safety regulations and training. And to his family, I hope they're able to find some sense of justice in what I'm sure is a legal process that will go on for quite some time until they are able to secure that justice for themselves and for their son, who unfortunately lost his life. Anyways, we're going to get back to the main show. Just wanted to keep you guys updated on that really terrible and tragic story out of Orlando, Florida this past week. Okay, guys, so before we get into our main topics for the day, the top five countdown of the other stories, we got to talk about this Will Smith, Chris Rock slap. So here I am Sunday thinking it's just going to be another Oscars night. I'm sitting down watching, and I thought it was staged when it happened until it kept going. And he was cussing, like Will Smith was really on 10. And I'm like, this is either some incredible acting or he real deal just went up there and slapped Chris Rock. And I got to be honest, then I thought back at some of the jokes that had been made. I still didn't expect this to happen. And it's not the greatest look. Will, he had to go and apologize after the fact because he knew it was a terrible look. You can't let something get you that upset. And it made his first Oscar win so bittersweet. But yeah, man, that was an absolutely crazy, crazy, crazy moment at this year's Oscars. And of course, Will won his first Oscar for his performance in King Richard, won the Best Actor Oscar. And the whole moment was just tarnished by that incident prior. So yeah, I hope privately they're able to work it out. But one of the craziest moments I can remember from the Oscars recently, like, period. Let me know what you guys think. And of course, let's get to our anniversary show and this countdown of the top five stories from this past year. Let's get the show started, man. I don't know about you guys, but this was an especially crazy year of news. And it's been a really crazy few years if you think about it. We are 2 years now, 2 years and change into this pandemic. In fact, almost 2 years to the day. Here we are near the end of March when the lockdowns really started and we kind of saw life as we know it change drastically inside of this country and around the world. And here we are just around 2 years later, really still dealing with the consequences and the fallout of the actions or the missed actions of world governments. And really adjusting to a new normal in life, man. That's the craziest thing to think about. But with the 1 year anniversary being this week, it really gave me a chance and some time to reflect on what's been happening throughout the world over the past year. What are some of the most interesting, crazy, or newsworthy stories? And there are so many to choose from, literally so many that I had a chance to choose from. Of course, there are some honorable mentions, one because it happened just outside of the scope of our 1 year of being on the air. But after we check off these honorable mentions, I'm going to go through my top five news stories of this year, why they were important, what they were about. But of course, as I just said, let's get through these honorable mentions first. So, honorable mention numero uno didn't make the list because it happened a couple of months before the show started. I'm talking, of course, about January 6th of 2021, another infamous day in our country's history. We had people literally storm the United States Capitol. The flag of Dixie was walked through the halls of power in this country. The flag of the Confederacy, a secessionist nation and a country that tried to split our country in two so that they could preserve the institution of slavery and exercise their freedom to own slaves without interference from the North in the Union. Their battle flag was carried through the halls of power. Someone smeared their feces inside of Congress, like, mind-blowing stuff. There's so many angles to even think about with this story, right? So let's start off with the fact that it had to be a very confusing day for police, because usually law enforcement, and this is historically, they are going to trend towards more conservatism and maintaining power and order within a given society. It's one of the caveats, if you will, of not only the nation state, but even back to feudalism and systems like that. Like, at the end of the day, you had sheriffs, you had knights and soldiers that provided law enforcement to protect the interests of the wealthy and powerful. And that has not changed. The reality is that law enforcement on a whole is more a conservative institution, right? So now that we've gotten that out of the way, why was it a confusing day for police in the Capitol? It was confusing because I think for some of them, the mask and the veil all came down, right? They were so caught up in this bubble world they had created for themselves that the enemy is these liberal Democrats, and they're the ones that are fostering trouble and causing people to harbor resentment, putting out false narratives with the police killings and causing these riots. Like, there's all these things that law enforcement officers, I'm sure it's been drilled into them between water cooler talk, or if they go home and watch like a Fox News or a One America News Network, like, there are all these things that affect cop culture. And the reality is it had to be a removal of the veil on January 6th of last year when they realized that all these people who they're supposedly supposed to be on their side would turn on them in a heartbeat because their allegiances lie with the demagogue that they've given their adoration to. Like, they're here because they've been convinced that the election was stolen, and they're willing to resort to violent means, even though they're usually pro-law enforcement. Because we're not allowing them to have their way, they've turned violent against us. And so it was mind-blowing from that standpoint that there was, I'm sure, a lot of police officers who just were looking around like, what, wait, this isn't how it's supposed to be. And what made it even worse was because they were looking at people who usually and traditionally would be marching in support of them, of course they're not going to open fire. And that's one of the other dichotomies about January 6th that we got into, was how if the complexion of the protesters and the rioters were different, I don't even know that people would have breached the Capitol gates, much less being in the rotunda and, you know, Congress people's offices. They would have literally gunned people down in the streets. But we've had that discussion, and we'll have to give that a whole show to focus on the literal biases in law enforcement and how they're built into the system, not only for cops to exercise their biases without fear of punishment or retribution, but even in the way that laws are written and applied. We think about laws like stop and frisk, where they notify, especially if someone's caught on like a street camera, someone's a repeat offender, then that person is likely to be more stopped. And that person may turn out to be black or brown. Like, there's all these things built into the system, man. So many of them. But I think it was really crazy for police last January 6th to see, like, these people are coming at me, and how am I going to protect myself? What am I going to do? So I think it was a really rude wake-up call for a lot of Leos who are bought into the propaganda that they're the last line of defense between a civil society and anarchy, when it's really that they're the last line of defense between a wealthy and powerful set of people who want to run society and are running society into the ground, kind of, so that they can just squeeze as many dollars out of it as possible. And a bunch of people, themselves included, like, one of the crazier things that I was thinking about is the fact that cops right now, if people started rioting and protesting in the streets because gas is $4 a gallon, I think there would be some cops who would be like beating people with batons to maintain $4 a gallon gas, even though oil is back under $100 a barrel. Like, that's the kind of mentality that we're dealing with so much of the time that makes change so inherently hard, because when you have people that are dug in and have been given precedent after precedent to behave a certain way, man, a culture change is, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's highly improbable, if not extremely and extraordinarily difficult to do. But January 6th was a game-changing day in our nation's history. And I don't think we think about that enough. And I think one of the things we also have to pay attention to is the relative lack of punishment for the people that stormed the Capitol that day. But as I said, man, there's so much more to get into with this January 6th story. But of course, we have more stories to report on from last year as we count down our top five stories of the year. Now, I say count down like it's a top five. The reality is, it's just the five most interesting. These are in no particular order in terms of rank from most to least interesting, just five of the most interesting stories I felt from last year or from the past year. But let's move on to our second honorable mention before we jump into that top five list. And that second honorable mention was a story that dropped last year regarding that in the course of a 40-year study, four decades, they had studied police killings and statistics and found that over half of the people that were killed by police were not reported to any official statistics. There is no federal body that they're reporting to, and some just have not been entered into like the death systems in terms of coroner's offices like that. Some because of straight up mistakes clerically by departments, others with a more seemingly sinister undertone to them not being filed away. But over half the people, the long and short of it, is that over half the people that were killed by police in a 40-year period their deaths were not statistically recorded and reported. They essentially just died. And it blew my mind when I learned this. Like, out of 30,000 people that they studied, right around 17,000 of them did not have their deaths properly reported and recorded as a statistic. So those people just lost their lives. They're just dead. And when you have a system in place that like protects and preserves that, that's out of here, man. That's crazy. That's downright crazy. We got to keep things pushing. So those are the two honorable mentions. The January 6th riots at the Capitol, just because it happened outside of the scope of the year of this show. And the fact that police only have reported, at least in the past 40 going on 50 years, roughly half of the people that they kill as like statistics. That's a bit of a tough pill to swallow. But anyways, we got to keep things pushing. Let's get into our five most interesting stories, according to me, from this past year. So number five, and once again, these are not in any particular order of most to least interesting, just the five most interesting stories to me from this past year. So number five, we're going to start off with the Taliban retaking Afghanistan in a literal fortnight. I made a prediction as they were starting to take certain cities and as the U.S. was working to get civilian personnel as well as military personnel out of the country. I said, what are they leaving the soldiers in Afghanistan with? Not much. And with the way the Taliban has been fiercely fighting to retake certain regions, because at that point, they were retaking some regions on the outskirts of the country and kind of working their way in towards Kabul, the capital. And I sat there and I said, man, the way that we're leaving things, like, they're going to be able to retake the place in a few months if we're not careful. And the very next week after the last bits of U.S. military personnel had been flown out of the country, the Taliban stormed into Kabul and took the city. So this essentially happened 2 weeks after the U.S. fully withdrew from Afghanistan. The government that they left behind fell. It fell to the Taliban. And I'm not going to lie to you. I came on the air and I apologized because I said, I misled you guys when I said that it would be a few months. I severely underestimated exactly how bad the situation was in Afghanistan. And so I had to go on the air and apologize for saying a few months when literally the very next week they fell. A week after that, they fell. That was crazy. So number five, Afghanistan falls to the Taliban in a literal fortnight. Like, you can't make this up. You have a functioning government. 2 weeks later, the Taliban's back in power. We're going to keep things moving, though. So number four on our top five stories from this past year, number four was the Surfside condo collapse down in South Florida. At this point, the worst building-related, non-terrorism-related disaster in terms of death toll in United States history. It was heartbreaking from the start. Apparently, there were some renovations going on at these condos, the Surfside condos, and there was some erosion taking place maybe by the pool area and a parking garage. At any rate, there was a failure in the building structure and it collapsed one night, I believe it was around 1 o'clock in the morning, with a bunch of residents still inside. Over 100 people died as a result of this building collapse. So that was our number four story from the past year. The condo collapse back in June of last year, where well over 100 people lost their lives due to the failure of the structures at the Surfside condos. We're going to move on to our number three story of the day, though. And that story is the Astroworld tragedy. Still, or to this point, one of the worst concert disasters in American history. An artist that I am a huge fan of, admittedly. I have no qualms in saying that. I think he's made incredible music. I also, unfortunately, think that some of the ways that he's carried out concerts in the past, it's not to say that he would encourage this kind of thing because he's not a madman. I can't see that being the case. But there have been people that passed out. I know better than if Travis Scott's coming into town to go down to the floor level unless I'm trying to be in a crush of people. And that's unfortunately what took place at Astroworld this past year, as there was a panic that kind of ensued in the crowd and in the surge and in the wave of people. Close to 10 people lost their lives that night, unfortunately, ending up being suffocated inside of that crowd and the crowd swell. There is still well over $1 billion of litigation going on right now in regards to this. And it's a tough and really crazy situation. It really is an insane situation, both legally and just from a human standpoint, what happened that night at Astroworld. I'm not going to sit here and speculate and say that it was completely preventable, because I don't know that. But what I do know is that concerts, man, there's a reason why they have so much staff and personnel. There's a reason why it's not easy or cheap to put on something like a music festival, because when you're expecting that many people inside of an environment like that, you have to have the highest safety protocols, standards, and procedures in place so that if someone has a medical emergency, they're not just being carried out like they're crowd surfing, but they're given active attention. There were ambulances in the crowd, man. And so that was one of the more heartbreaking nights of the year last year, was just seeing that these people that went to what was supposed to be a joyful event for them ended up losing their lives. Yeah, man, it's really unfortunate what took place at Astroworld this past year. Prayers still, as always, for those victims who lost their lives. And of course, to Travis, we saw that he was back in the studio this past week. That's an encouraging sign. He also had Project Heal. He's really trying to make amends in the community, and I'll give him credit for reaching out and making those efforts. There's still a long way to go, and I'm sure that for all the families involved, there's probably going to need to be more than that to restore some sense of justice for the loss that I'm sure that they're still experiencing on a day-to-day basis. But that's our number three story from this past year. We're going to move on to our number two story from this past year, though. And that story was the Pandora Papers. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Panama Papers, but the Panama Papers came out around 2015 and essentially said all the rich people in the world are hoarding all the money. They're taking it out, whether it's through special tax breaks, special things they get to charge when they own large private or are the majority or even just large stakeholders in large public corporations. Like, rich people around the world, both the criminals and those that we see on the up and up, they're using these law firms to hide all of their money. They're shifting the tax burden onto the masses, but even not just the tax burden, the literal amount of money in society, well over $20 trillion was being hidden offshore. That's what the Panama Papers said. And nothing changed. Nothing happened. With the exception that the reporter that broke the Panama Papers story, she was blown up in her car. And that was kind of the end of that. It was a really unfortunate thing that took place, but the story died down. Up until last year, when the Pandora Papers came out, and the Pandora Papers essentially put everybody on notice that, hey, not only has there not been any regulation, but as bad as we said it was the last time, it's actually much, much, much worse. That was, and you know what, I'm bringing it up now. I don't know how many people they're gonna get up in arms about it, because at the end of the day, once again, that's one of those things, and I'm going to talk about it in our main story today, is the structure of this game we play, why it's so hard to make change, even when we recognize like blatant injustice, when we can see something bald and on his face, it's like, that is unfair. It's still extraordinarily difficult to make any kind of systemic changes. And I'm going to break down why when we get to our main story of the day today. But yeah, man, the Pandora Papers were an extension and an expounding of the Panama Papers, showing in even more detail the legal structure behind how money is hid, what people are doing to hide their money, and the fact that not only are the legal bits a bit shady, but there are some people, a lot of people even, who are using extra legal or illegal means and manners to hide or launder their money. And some of the biggest banks in the world are participating in this scheme to take money and extract it from society. Of course, for their role, they make their fees. That was the number two story from this past year. And I gotta say, I'm still shocked and surprised that there wasn't even greater reaction. But I think the Panama Papers kind of set the stage for the Pandora Papers to not land as heavily, which is that we found out before what was going on, and then nothing changed except that the reporter got killed. It's a reminder to people like, yeah, what are you gonna do about it? Now, personally, I think there's strength in numbers, but I also understand that people are first and foremost always looking out for themselves. So let's get to our number one story of this past year. And that story, of course, is the several lawsuits. And once again, this is not in any ranking of these are the most important stories. I just want to make that clear, because while this is not maybe the most important thing, it is number five or number one, however you want to put it, on our list of the top five stories of this past year. And it's that the facade of the NFL is crumbling down under several different lawsuits that that organization is facing right now. So it started off with John Gruden and some leaked emails that were a result of the investigation into the Washington football team and the culture there that had fostered some behaviors as grotesque as sexual harassment being a regular thing. And so in the midst of this investigation, there was a treasure trove of emails that were apparently being sent between high-level people inside the league. And it was John Gruden's emails that came under some particular scrutiny for having, let's say, some colorful and really bigoted language spread throughout it. These emails essentially outed John Gruden as a scumbag, as a bigoted scumbag. There are a few in the NFL from this past year, right? So there was Urban Meyer, former head coach of the Jaguars, that was outed to the world as just a categorically bad person. But then you also had a John Gruden, who seemed to be a bad person in a sea of bad people, who was singled out. This is a part of what his lawsuit is alleging as well, that the timing of the announcement of the findings to how everything went down, he essentially said it was a character assassination plot. And the reality is he's just the only one that got singled out. Now, what I'm curious to see is if there are more emails that get leaked, if there are more high name and high profile people. I guarantee you there are some people in the NFL who have been quaking in their boots since John Gruden got fired because they're worried about the communications that they've made regarding other people in society. And if that wasn't bad enough, because we've known what the NFL culture is, right? It was shown when Colin Kaepernick peacefully was taking a knee to protest police brutality and the way that the NFL's core fan base raged up against that, the way the NFL fostered a misinformation campaign to switch the narrative over from its original intent to somehow a smear against the military. It was really carefully done and orchestrated, so much so to the point where Colin Kaepernick is still holding out hope, but the reality is the NFL knows they can just time him out. They can wait another 10 years from now and then say that he's too old excuse, which they're already currently using. But with the John Gruden lawsuit, that culture, that undercurrent of the NFL where the people in power there really hold some very backwards views, and it's always been assumed, but here it was in plain sight, if you will. This is how these people really talk about you and think about you. And so it was an incredible moment in that regard because it peeled back the mask that gets worn so much by the NFL, where it puts itself out there as this forward-thinking organization. But no one believes that. No one with any common sense believes it. They can put out all the initiatives they want. The fact of the matter is they're still supporting a ton of other less than questionable in terms of moral integrity initiatives that are out there. And so with that, there was this huge domino, this kind of, okay, wow, John Gruden's gone. What's next? And it quieted down up until the end of the season when Brian Flores was released as the head coach, fired as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. There was a lawsuit that came down and hit hard, alleging racial discrimination in the practices for hiring and interviewing, as well as in their firing practices and just the general culture of the NFL. And that was another bombshell, another one that it was another broadside, really rocked the NFL's boat. And as that story came out, I was thinking in my head, well, now maybe people will begin to see that Colin Kaepernick was a bit justified and that he has been blackballed, but that was plain to see anyways, but now they really can't ignore it. But the truth is, a lot of people have, for better or worse, really just ignored the proceedings. And of course, that's because the legal proceedings take a long time to play out. People's attention spans are getting shorter by the day, it seems. But the truth of the matter is, those are two really huge lawsuits against really a foundational cornerstone of our country's society and culture. Sports, especially the NFL, an organization that's so powerful that it essentially has its own day of the week and has essential holds on the attention of the mass public on several other days, 4 out of 7 days of the week. Like, if we're really being honest about it, 5 this past season with a lot of the COVID restrictions. But generally, you have Sunday night football, Monday night football, Sunday regular football, Thursday night football, and then sometimes Saturday night games. Like, an organization that powerful, man, to know what's really running the undercurrent of it is supposed to be huge news. And my hope is that these lawsuits begin to expose more of the ownership and management for who they are. But I know it's going to take a while. That's how the legal proceedings go. And so I will definitely be keeping my eye on it because it's still a developing story, but it's certainly a huge one. Both the John Gruden lawsuit and the Brian Flores lawsuit against the NFL, both of them alleging really discriminatory practices, but one kind of being on the side of the discriminator saying I was unfairly put out for being the only discriminator, and one from the side of the people being discriminated against, minority head coaches, black coaches, coaches of color, who are getting far fewer head coaching opportunities in the NFL than ever. But I just want to take some time to say thank you again to everyone watching on YouTube. If you've been liking it so far, please hit that like, as well as subscribe to the channel and tap that little notification bell so that you can get notified anytime we put a new episode up. If you're listening to this on the radio, you can do the same as well. We can be found on YouTube at the No Alter Egos podcast. Just type that into your search bar and it should pull up. The channel is still growing. We're still bringing the community in. But for everyone that watches, that hits that like button, that subscribes, and that shares it to their social media, you guys are human gold, man. It's really, really amazing and incredible to have any of that support. And so whenever anyone does engage in it, I appreciate you. And to the ones that have been doing it, I appreciate you guys more than I can even put into words right now. But we're going to get back to the show because we have a few topics to get into from this past week. Just some quick news headlines, though. Coach Penny Hardaway is under investigation by the NCAA for apparent violations at Memphis. It's still a relatively new story as the details come out. This is, of course, as March Madness is going on. But as more details come out, I'll try and fill you guys more than likely next week or maybe a couple weeks from now as the story unfolds and more about these allegations of NCAA rules violations begin to come out about Coach Hardaway and the University of Memphis. In climate change news, so the Conger's Ice Shelf in Antarctica, it's in East Antarctica, which is known traditionally to be one of the coldest regions on planet Earth. Antarctica itself, clearly one of the coldest, the South Pole, one of the coldest places on our planet. And to think that there is an ice shelf that was roughly the size of New York City that just broke off this past week because temperatures have been almost unreasonably high. But that's where we are in the climate change game. Scientists were not expecting that much of an ice shelf to break off, although they have been expecting it. Whereas temperatures are traditionally negative 60 degrees this time of year, it was registering around 10 degrees Fahrenheit or negative 12 degrees Celsius, which is far warmer than people are used to and expect for that region of the Antarctic for this time of the year. Now, to balance it out, the scientist that was there said, clearly we don't want it to happen, but even though it was the size of New York City, it's still relatively small in comparison to all of Antarctica. And so while it is going to influence the seas somewhat, it's not so crazy that we have to be in a huge panic about it. But it is still something of note to consider. The Conger's ice shelf has now broken off. Something the size of New York City has now broken off, which while in comparison to Antarctica may not be that huge, it's still just another small domino. And if we allow enough of these dominoes to fall, who's to say? Who's to say? But we can't pretend as though these things aren't happening and they're not happening with greater and greater rapidity with each passing year. And my goal is to keep you guys as updated and as aware as we can, because when we have politicians in office that aren't speaking about climate change and the urgency of taking care of this one planet that we know about in terms of being able to host us as life forms, like if we don't have politicians that are interested in doing that, then they've already revealed their hand. They've shown the side that they're on, and it's not the side of humanity. It's not the side of sanity. It is unreasonable at this point to try and ignore climate science. It is beyond delusional. It's willfully ignorant to an almost evil level to try and deny climate science at this point. Everyone has to share the planet. There's certain realities that we can't spin or propagandize our way out of. Certain things that we just have to really face the truth of it, face the music, and accept it for what it is. In another climate-related story, ExxonMobil is now burning off excess natural gas, putting more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere so that they can mine Bitcoin. And I don't even know where to go with this one because, truth be told, it's almost comically evil at this point. Forget about the fact that these oil companies have been price gouging at the pump essentially now, because the price of oil in terms of per barrel rate has dropped. It's well under $100 a barrel right now. And those exorbitant prices that they blamed on the price per barrel of oil are still exorbitant. They're just taking profit at this point because they can. They're not in any hurry to change because no congressional regulation is coming to stop the gravy train. I can't stress to you guys enough how much Congress is in people's pockets, especially food, energy, and defense. Those are like the big three in terms of industry. And now tech. Tech may be at this point over all of them because tech has a hand in all of them. But like, lobbying, legalized bribery in our country, man, makes it hard. It makes it really hard. It makes it hard to just live life. Because you know that there are laws that are unfair, and you know that those laws aren't ever going to get changed because the people that are responsible for passing and changing them, they're not incentivized to do things in the public's interest. They're incentivized to do things in the interests of the large campaign donors that make sure that they can keep their jobs, because we all know, especially because dark money is allowed in U.S. politics on an almost unlimited scale, elections can be bought in our country. And so we're at this point now where we're witnessing this large corporation burn off an excess resource to mine digital currency, further polluting the atmosphere and the people that we put in charge to make sure that, hey, man, like stuff and practices like this is a bit egregious. Their hands are essentially tied. It is what it is, though, man. Got to keep things moving to our two main stories of the day before we wrap the show up. So we're going to talk right now about Joe Biden and this statement that he made this past week as he was wrapping up his speech. So in front of nearly 1,000 attendees at this speech he was giving in Warsaw, Poland at the Royal Castle, President Biden said that this man, Vladimir Putin, quote, cannot remain in power. Since then, the White House has attempted to spin it and say he wasn't calling for his ouster. That's pretty clear cut. And I got to be honest with you. I've spoken about President Biden on this podcast before. I think he's relatively ineffectual and feckless. I have not really liked his approach of I'm going to try and walk down the middle, because all you're doing is giving even more room for anarcho-capitalism or just extremist right-wing policies and policy lunatics and politicians to gain ground. This is not the time to try and waffle and be middling. You have to put in policies that are going to not only strengthen the social safety net, if you will, but that can fiscally lead our country down a more responsible path. We don't need to spend as much on defense while leaving education to rot, while leaving infrastructure to rot. And so his approach to me over this past year, whether it was his handling of COVID or just his general approach to diplomacy, I haven't been the biggest fan. I'm gonna be very honest with you. I also don't like that Vice President Kamala Harris has been particularly behind the scenes more than anything. I haven't seen her take an active role in her vice presidency the way that I would have liked to. But those are just some personal preferences and complaints. I say all that to say that after all this time, the truth be told, as I said, even though I thought he was a little bit feckless, I'm impressed by this statement. Maybe he accidentally did it. Maybe it was a slip up. Or maybe, just maybe, this man is as cunning and crafty as is needed when you're going up against a madman like Vladimir Putin. And I say that because you have to have a fundamental understanding that the presidency is one of, if not the most powerful office in the world. Now, growing up, I've had to become more wise to the fact that presidents, while they are extraordinarily powerful, that power is limited to a degree by Congress and the Supreme Court. It's the whole checks and balances system. Now, it does not work to the degree that you think that it does, but it does work somewhat. Presidents can still write executive orders, but if they're universally disliked, Congress can come together. Although in this day and age, I don't think that's going to be nearly the easy task that they think it will be. But Congress can come together to try and put a stop to presidents, but generally presidents can be very powerful. And so for him to use the power of his office to say something like that, that is an extraordinarily meaningful statement on the world stage coming from the U.S. president. You have a president calling for another head of state's removal from office. And I know that U.S. presidents have done this historically in the past, but I'm speaking about the enemy, if you will, that we're doing this to, because I don't really view Russian people as our enemies. I think both of our countries are run by like insanely sociopathic people. But at the end of the day, my beef's not really with them. It's the fact that y'all got a madman in there the same way we just had a madman in office, and we kind of have this weird man in office right now. But at any rate, to see him make that statement, I gained a little bit of respect. I'm not going to lie, because that is not an easy thing to say, wielding the kind of power he wields. Now, there has been some backpedaling, as I said earlier. The White House said that he wasn't really directly calling for his ouster. But I say all that to say, President Biden, man, you got some points for me. I got to give him some credit because he could. He could have just been absolutely bland right down the middle with this. But he made a powerful statement, and I think it came from his heart. And I, for one, can respect that. Speak from the heart. I'd rather you do it against someone extremely powerful, wasting their power, than sit there in your office and do nothing. We're going to move on, though, to our main topic of the day. And that topic is the great game. Capitalism. I've spoken about it on this podcast before, but I felt especially moved to talk about it this week because I've come to realize how steeped in certain media and information we all are. How we are so bought into this system that if we're going to be honest, here's the dirty, dirty, dirty truth of capitalism, the dirtiest truth. Capitalism needs some form of slavery to both get started and to maintain itself. It really does. Now, I know that that's going to sound really bad, so allow me to justify and explain, if you will, just for a few minutes while I break this down for us. Forget about just the start of the U.S. and how slavery was the start to this country. It's the fact that even if you're talking about wage slavery, where people are paid such pitifully low wages that it's hard for them to maintain a livelihood and a living, that's what globalism and globalization has really been about. It's about corporations finding the cheapest and most vulnerable source of labor. That's why sweatshops exist for these large companies that make clothing and shoes. That's why these giant chip making factories and all that, where they have to get and separate the natural resources that go into making these chips. Like, it's bad out there when you really start to dig behind what's in some of your favorite devices, like your iPhone or your Android phone. When you think about how the natural resources are mined, where they're mined, and how those mining practices go. The fact that Nestle still has some questionable practices in their labor in terms of how their cacao and the chocolate is harvested. There's all these layers of corruption, and you begin to see the truth that at its basic level, in order to produce extraordinary levels of profit and profitability, someone has to get the short end of the stick. Because ideally, you'd have a corporation that's growing steadily. So when you think about capitalism from a fundamental level, you begin to realize that the slavery is built into it. Whether direct slavery as in unpaid labor, or wage slavery as in labor that's paid so far beneath the value of their actual labor that the levels of profit are kept high. And then we've built our economies around the profitability of these corporations. So when the stock prices fall, it's not some magical thing. It's usually you'll hear a stock price drops if they're off on their quarterly earnings reports, because corporations build this into the business model now where, okay, how can we find the cheapest way to get natural resources, the cheapest way we can find and pay labor, and then how can we put this onto our product and really make our supply chain and supply line as cheap as possible too, and then sell the markup to the customer and collect on the back end in terms of the cost between production and shipment to delivery to the customer and what they're willing to pay for it. It's this whole entire process, man. And we're caught up in these games between these corporations. So when we think about not only wars in Africa and the Middle East, which are really not only for military positioning, but strategic position, because a lot of the world still wants and runs on oil. Like, this great game, this great system we have and that we've bought into that we call capitalism, it's really bled us, and it's bled us dry. And we're so caught up in the gravy train of it and thinking that we're going to be the next set of people to strike it rich that we're not taking a look around us at the real suffering that takes place. I had a thought about the fact that we've had several iterations of human history, and throughout it, we still haven't managed to find an economic system that can really and truly take care of everyone and allow everyone to live their truest and freest lives. And even under capitalism, we see all these things in socialism about breadlines and starving people. That's life right now in America for a lot of people. I volunteer at my local church, and there are tons of people that come by to that food bank once a week when they give the food out. When we give that food away, There's cars lined up to come and get food. People that maybe can't afford it or just trying to lighten their grocery bill that pull up to get food. This is in the richest country on earth. Well, the second richest now to China. Right? Like, I think about the fact that there are homeless people running rampant through major metropolitan areas all throughout this country. And yet we pretend that, oh, well, that's just something that we can't do. But the reality is we've been tricked into participating silently in this game, of Thrones between really rich people, the corporations that they own, and them and their friends and cohorts in government who actually pull the strings of power and the levers of power inside of our world. We're kept at each other's throats with religious differences and racial and cultural differences. All the meanwhile, these people that, you know, are supposed to be the leaders in our societies, yeah, they look different, even if it's mostly a hegemony of a certain type of person. And so they really are looking at the situation pragmatically in terms of like, yeah, we run the world. Like, why would we change things? And they see justification in the suffering of the masses because the masses inflict suffering on each other. We participate in that suffering. We participate in each other's oppression because we're sold cultural values at young ages that we're taught are bedrock foundations. And instead of coming together to work for collective best interests, we are told that living under this system that extracts as much value as it can, and that's built into the model, find a way to maximize profits. We worship that system and its values as the pinnacle of human achievement. When the truth is, there are many ways that we can improve upon the economy or the economic structure of capitalism. The profit motive and incentive being the biggest motive of all, that can change. Literally, we have to make sure the corporations, especially as they're growing, that they keep a pledge or something in mind that they will also serve a social good. Right now, without that, they can operate as sociopaths in antisocial ways with little to no consequences that they ever truly face. Like, the truth of the matter is, we don't have to be caught up in living like this amongst these companies. We don't have to give away so many of our freedoms. We're going to keep things moving to what I've been reading and our Tech Talk Minute before we jump into the final thought for today. So this week, I have been continuing to read American Demagogue, and it has been brilliantly insightful. Now, there's a part of me that feels as though it's covering more of the 18th and 19th centuries. However, it is giving an extraordinarily clear picture of how people use demagoguery and the literal pulpit to achieve levels of fame and wealth that were really astounding for their day, even while preaching out against the excesses of the rich. But they were for themselves gaining fame and notoriety by traveling around preaching these fire and brimstone sermons. Interestingly enough, there's something and a new insight that I'm gaining, especially into the Ivy League and how they are comprised. The Ivy Leagues essentially started off all as different theological seminaries, religious institutions founded by the Puritans in this country. Harvard in New England and Cambridge, Yale in New Haven in Connecticut, Princeton, which was the College of New Jersey, over in Princeton in New Jersey. Like, all of these colleges were founded really with religious ideals in mind and have become secular institutions. But it was so, in terms of the religious fervor, it was so strong in our country that back in 1742, Yale closed for 2 months because of religious differences brought on by the preachings of the Gilbert Tennents and George Whitefields and Jonathan Mayhews of the world, who were going out and speaking, the Jonathan Edwardses of the world even, who were going out and preaching these doctrines to try and revive the church, if you will. They were going against the Anglican church, the Presbyterian church, as well as the Catholic church. And it was really, really crazy to see and to know that a lot of these institutions that are the blue bloods of our country are steeped in religious history and are part of the religious foundations of this nation, even though they seem and act as these secular institutions these days. They're really rooted in Puritanism. And that was really interesting to learn about as I've been reading through the rest of this book. It also turned out that George Whitefield was a bit of a hypocrite, someone who went on to own a slave and seemed to be excited about the prospect of owning another human being that was ostensibly gifted to him. Benjamin Franklin, another thing that I had a chance to learn in this book, at least reading through to this point, was the fact that he was able to gain a certain level of wealth and prominence for himself by being the postmaster while he was also printing out a pamphlet and newspaper that he was hoping would be read by many. So he became his own distribution chain using the government's power and was able to amass great wealth for himself as the postmaster of our relatively young nation. And one of the final and most pressing thoughts that I have about what I've been reading or what I have read this past week is the fact that the prosperity gospel has been around since the 1700s at least. I'm sure it was before then as well. But in the 1700s, there were still preachers preaching the prosperity gospel, telling people that the rich were to be admired because by their wealth and riches and their so-called physical favor on earth, it was being reflected, or it was a reflection of God's favor to them. And so the prosperity gospel didn't start with the Joel Osteens and all these other megachurch pastors of the world. Even back in the 1700s, during these religious revivals, people were being sold this stuff. They were being sold the prosperity gospels. And that blew my mind as I was reading to know, in addition to some other things, that this is nothing new, that preachers have been preaching this, you're going to be rich one day too, to people since the very foundations of this country. We're going to move on really quickly right now, though, to our Tech Talk Minute before we jump into our final thought. And for our Tech Talk Minute this week, I actually want to talk about TikTok's new music release platform, Sound On. It's a game-changing step, I think, for a lot of independent artists, myself being one of them, where on TikTok especially, which has been this incredible platform for not only releasing music, but for gaining an audience for that music, they're putting their hands out now, and they're saying that as a user, if you're an artist, you can have your artistic works now credited and verified to your profile without having to go through what has traditionally been a historically long and tedious process. It's not easy to get your musical credits. Like, I have songs that are out that are being played on TikTok that I have yet to have been able to get credit for. And so I want to give a shout out to TikTok for their new platform. I still want you guys to make it easier, though, for artists to claim credit for their work on the platform. I know Sound On is a step in that direction, but there are other songs that artists like myself have released that if we're not ultra famous, it's hard to gain that credit online, especially on a platform like TikTok. However, Sound On is, I believe, a step in the right direction, especially for independent artists and creators to really take control of the music that you're putting out there to the world, control your narrative, and control the vibes that you put out there. So big shout out to TikTok for their new music launching platform, Sound On. I think it's going to be a game changer for a ton of artists. We're going to move on to our final thought of the day, though. And that thought ties back in to what we're just talking about, the great game of capitalism. And the thought is this: no one understands the system that we live in. Find a way to use it to your advantage without preying on other people. And no one understands that the system doesn't fundamentally change until we all do. And so you don't have to put that immediate pressure on yourself to be this perfect person. Just act with integrity. Understand that there are rules out there that people have been bending for a while. And I'm not sitting here to tell you to bend or break the rules. But what I am sitting here to tell you is don't allow yourself to be one of the people in society that are being taken advantage of. Knowledge is power, but knowledge is powerless if it's not applied. And so with the little stuff that I try and share throughout the week, when I tell you guys about the fact that, yes, we do live in a society where the economy is gamed and rigged, it doesn't mean that you have to sit back and wallow in like any kind of self-pity. I want you guys to continue to educate yourselves. Find something that you love to do, because the reality is, while the world is a messed up place and the game is rigged, there is still an opportunity for you to at least get a slice of the pie. Because we know that we can't change the world individually. We can only change the world collectively. And until we come together as a collective, you have to do what's in the interest of yourself and your family without harming other people. I want to stress that again, because there are some people whose interests are not good for everyone else's interests. But we are living now in a time and in a day where you can create and take advantage of opportunities for yourself. And so I want to encourage you that even though we know and understand that the game is rigged, don't be discouraged. You can still find something that you love to do and at least find a way to not only make it work for yourself, but to give yourself a little bit of joy, to find some joy in the work that you're doing. Because there is nothing more freeing than doing something that you love to do and earning a real living from it. And even though the system that we live in is messed up, it is what it is. And if we're being pragmatic, then the very least that we can do is find a way to succeed and thrive despite the horrors of the system. I want to thank you guys, of course, as always, for listening in. If you've been watching us on the YouTube channel, don't forget to like and subscribe. It helps us out. Comment, tell us what you think about this week's episode. And of course, hit that notification bell so that you can be notified anytime a new episode comes up. To everyone that's been listening in on our broadcast partner stations, thank you guys as always for being here. Don't forget to follow us or to follow me on Instagram. Follow the show on Instagram. You can find me at Trill Kennedy with no I, so it's TRLLKENNEDY. You can find the show No Alter Egos under that handle at No Alter Egos on both Instagram and Facebook. We put up little snippets of the show each and every week. And so I just want to thank you guys for once again being here with me. Go throughout this week. Don't get caught up in how bad things are. Find a way that you can make a difference for yourself and the people around you. And collectively, we can work to make this world a better place. Go out there, work hard, but still take care of yourselves. And as always, God bless.
Looking in the mirror, I know I'm imperfect. Just like everybody else I know. Most times I wish the world looked beneath the surface. But I guess that's how life goes. Had to learn to love myself this time around. Pop a bottle in and take a sip just because. Book a flight and then take a trip just because. Love myself just because.